Hi there, I'm Stephen Gleeson and you're tuned to Tip FM. Stay put for the next hour or so here on Tip FM as we go back over the career of one of the greats of Irish racing, Charlie Swann. A lifetime spent in racing and the Clochjordan-based trainer is with me today. And Charlie, we're going to look back, I suppose, first off at your younger years. So tell us about where you grew up and what your younger years were like.
Hi, Stephen. Yes, I was born actually in the house that I'm living in now in Modrinne, Clochjordan. It's about 2 miles from Clochjordan. I've had some great times here. It's there's about 180 acres and plenty of room. When I had ponies and stuff when I was a kid, it was a great place to grow up. I loved the outdoors and I started hunting and stuff like that when I was very young. My dad used to be the huntsman for the Ormond Hunt, and I like the outdoor sports. I played plenty of sports then in school and stuff, rugby and football, hockey, tennis, table tennis, every sort of a sport really.
So what was school like, Charlie? Did you go to the local primary school? Where did you go to secondary school? How was all that?
Yeah, I went to the local primary school in Clochjordan, and then I went to Hedsford up in Kells. It's a boarding school. I went when I was seven. So I left home pretty early. I really enjoyed it there. Actually, it was great. It's a bit daunting when you're seven going somewhere that young, but I suppose I didn't know any better. I was told I was going, and that was it really. So I just accepted it.
Did you play many sports when you were in school up there in Hedford?
I did. I played cricket as well up in Hedford, cricket, rugby, did a lot of sports, swimming. I was very keen on the sports.
So of all the sports that you did take part in, I suppose there was one that was always going to draw you back, really. You'd been involved with horses from a very young age, you said. So was that something that you were going to drift back to, that you felt was, in your blood?
Yeah, I suppose we had ponies and stuff here when I was growing up, and I was always into the riding and the hunting, the show jumping, the hunter trials, and my dad was training horses, so I remember he was training a 2-year-old. He was breaking a yearling at the time. It was a yearling, and he asked me, would I be interested in riding it when it runs. And I was after doing a good bit of pony racing and stuff, and I said, yeah, I'd love to. But I didn't really think of it as a career. It was something that I was going to do, and, it was going to be a bit of fun, I thought, And so I used to ride this horse out every day, and eventually the race came. I got a license, and the race came. It was in Naas on, I think it was about March the 18th, 1983. And I was 15 years of age, and I won on my first ride. So it was a bit of a shock, but the horse was working well, but we thought he was quite speedy and stuff. And it was a great thrill, but I still didn't really kind of plan on, this is going to be my career. But I wrote two more winners then that year, and that sort of got me the bug. I sort of really started getting into it then.
That must be extraordinary, Charlie, to be 15 years of age and have your first winner, just to be that young and full of life, I suppose, and there you are, the main man again and winning the race. That must be unbelievable.
Yeah, I suppose when you're young, you take everything in your stride. You don't, but it was just, I enjoyed the winning part. I enjoyed the buzz and the, it's just a great feeling of winning a race, great satisfaction, But it sort of went from there, really. You know, I was lucky enough. My parents were they were very easygoing, really. They could. I was in boarding school then, and they sort of said to me, "Well, you know, would you like to give the racing a full go?" And so, you know, we came to the conclusion that, you know, that I would. And so I left school pretty early, which I sort of do regret now, leaving early. But then on the other hand, I might not have done as good if, you know, if I hadn't. But so I left school when I was 16 years of age, and I was one of the lucky ones. You know, I had a good career out of it, but it's not for everyone, and it's, you need a lot of luck and being in the right place at the right time, and you know you have to have a bit of talent as well, I suppose. But I was sort of lucky as well.
So to leave school at that age, really, it must have been daunting in some respects. But in another, I suppose there's a certain freedom there. And you're surrounded with horses, you love horses. And it must have been something you said you're just going to jump into. You know, subconsciously, did you think, this is something that I'm going to spend my future in? This is where my life is. I love this.
I did. When I left school, I said, you know, I said to myself, I'm going to really have a go at this and see what I can do. But, it was tough. I went to the Curragh then. I went to Kevin Prendergast's, you know, when I was 16. And so I had to leave home. I stayed in Diggs up there in Kildare town. And, you know, there was early mornings. We were in work at 7 o'clock. You know, you'd work till 1 o'clock. You'd be back at 4 and finish at 6. And I had a bicycle the first sort of 6 months I was there. Then I got a motorbike, actually, but you know, just to get me in and out of work. But it was, you know, it was tough going at that time, and but I really enjoyed it, and I knuckled down and worked hard. There was another apprentice there at the time, Kieran Fallon. And he went on then to be, you know, champion jockey in England 4 or 5 times, maybe 6 times. And, you know, we were good friends. We stayed in the same flat then for about 2 years at one stage. But it was amazing the way our careers, you know, he went on the flat and I ended up going jumping.
Did you influence each other a lot, do you think?
Yeah, I suppose we, I had ridden my first winner before Kieran had ridden his first winner, so I was getting a few rides, and some of the people that were looking for me to ride the horses, the secretary in the yard was able to put Kieran in for the ones that I couldn't ride, so we were sort of helping each other, you know, that way as well. And then vice versa, when he started getting going, I would ride horses that, you know, that he was asked to ride, so we sort of helped each other that way. And but he was always very talented rider, you'd know, when we were kids, like he was very, very natural. And he was, and obviously he turned out to be a brilliant rider.
So from there, really, it took off, I suppose. You won the Irish Jockeys Championships from the 1989-1990 season right up to 1997-1998. To win that much, you were really at the peak of your powers, I suppose. You know, what type of mindset do you need for that sort of success? How focused do you have to be?
I suppose, I mean, it took a while to get there. There was a lot of to-ing and throwing, a few falls in the mid-term. But I was riding over hurdles. I remember I had a few rides with Kevin Prendergast over hurdles, and I got a fall and broke my leg. And when I came back, my weight had shot up. So I went to Kevin and I said, look, I think I'm going to be too heavy for, you know, for the flat. So there and then he said, would you like to go jumping? I said, yeah, you know, I would. I'd love to go jumping full time. So he rang Desi Hughes for me. He thought he'd be the best man for me to go to. So he rang Desi. I spoke to him and he said, come up on Monday morning and you can start work. So I did that, and 3 weeks later the first jockey in the yard, Tom Morgan, he left to go to England. He got a good job in England, so he left. So I was just really lucky to get into the right place at the right time. You know, only 3 weeks after I arrived into a jump yard, I got, you know, first jockey job, which was unbelievable. It's hard work, but I was lucky to be there at the right time. And then obviously, you know, there's a lot of different things go on. You have to get on well with your boss. You know, you can't just have talent and not be nice and speak to him and, you know, say the right things. And, it all doesn't come down to talent. You have to be pretty savvy in the way you talk to him and the way you act and the way you do things. So talent just doesn't get you everything. It there's a lot of different factors that come into it, really. So, I started off with Desi and we had good times together. His horses were quite sick at the time, so we probably didn't have the success that we probably could have had. But at the same time, it led to a lot better places. I ended up going for a year to Nolmead. I rode for Nolmead for a year and then Mouse Morris. Then I went from Mouse Morris to Edward O'Grady. And then from Edwards, I went to Aidan O'Brien's. So it was a case of, it wasn't that I was switching jobs. I got these offers and the offers were getting better. I was getting to ride better horses. So I kind of moved on to the better class horses. And I mean, all the trainers I rode for, they're still training and they're all really good guys. But I suppose my main yard then was Aidan O'Brien when he was starting off in the jumping game, and he just took off like, you know, it was unbelievable how he took off. Like, he's an amazing trainer, but he could get terrible horses to win races. You know, it was just unbelievable what he'd do, and they'd keep improving and improving. He's just an amazing trainer. So I was sort of lucky that way. I just got into the right places at the right time as well. And it flew, you know, it just popped. My career seemed to go very quickly. The time just seemed to, you know, when I look back on it now, I probably didn't appreciate it. You know, it just seemed to go by so quick. But I was very, it's hard to know, you know, when you get into the zone of riding winners, all you want to do is ride winners, and you're hungry for riding winners. And like, you know, there'd be some days you'd come back and you didn't ride a winner, and you'd be in bad humor. It's amazing how it affects you. You know, you kind of, you know, when I look back on that, I said, God, I was hard on myself, you know. But I think to be top in any sport, you have to be like that. You have to be a bit selfish and a bit, you know, you have to go for it and do and try to ride as many winners as you can, you know.
The work rate and the drive and the, you know, the effort that jockeys and trainers and everyone surrounded with horse racing put in always strikes me as something that they just deeply love. They're thinking about it when they get up in the mornings. They're thinking about it when they go to bed at night. You know, is there such a thing as work-life balance in it? Because that's something that's spoken about a lot today. But to excel, really, do you have a work-life balance, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, there isn't that much time off, but at the same time, obviously the more successful I got, I was able to work it out that I was able to have a few days off here and there, because there wasn't racing every day during the winter, and the same in the summer, there's a lot of flat racing and mixed with it. So you could take your couple of days off. You might go and play golf or whatever. But it's about balancing it. But it is full on. You know, it is full on. Like the entries come out, you're trying to see what you're going to ride in the next, you know, in the next week, whatever. So even though you do have agents and things, but at the same time, you're still talking to your agent and you're telling him what horse you'd like to ride. And then you might have three or four rides in the one race, and you don't want to let down anybody. But at the same time, at the end of the day, you want to ride the best horse in the race. So most of the time I blame the agent for putting me on such a horse, even though it might be the best horse in the race. I blame the agent for, I'm afraid, God, you know, the agent put me on that horse, whatever, and more than likely that horse might win or whatever. But, you know, that was my way of getting around it, was, you know, blame the agent for not riding them.
Super. And we've three musical choices to pick during this show, Charlie, here on Time Out on Tip FM. What one would you like to pick? Is there any one that reminds you of that time in your life? Any song that stands out above the others? Because I know that you are into music. So which one is it?
I suppose the first one would probably be Queen, Don't Stop Me Now. I don't know. I suppose you always remember these songs. I think songs are a great thing to, you know, you'd often remember where you were, or, you know, when, you know, when you hear a song. So that's definitely the first one.
Tonight I'm gonna have myself a real good time. I feel alive. And the world, I'm turning inside out. Yeah. I'm floating around in ecstasy. So don't stop me now. Having a good time, having a good time.
I'm a shooting star leaping through the sky like a tiger, defying the laws of gravity. I'm a racing car passing by like Lady Godiva. I'm gonna go, 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 there's no stopping.
Charlie Swan is my guest today on Time Out here on Tip FM. I'm Stephen Gleeson, and we're going to move on with the show here now. And when you hold the Irish record, Charlie, for the most winners in a season, a lot of the record books have it in as 147 in 1995-96 season. And you just must have been so busy to ride so many winners within the same time frame. Did you even get a chance to sleep back then? Because, I mean, you must have been just going from meet to meet.
Yeah, no, it was an intense time. It was actually 150. I've seen it in a couple of books or something that they've had me down for 147. But I actually remember it was 150 because the last day of the season, I had no ride in the maiden hurdle, and I was looking for one more winner to get to the 150. I didn't want to finish the season 149. And Conor O'Dwyer very kindly let me ride his horse in the maiden hurdle for Christy Roach, and it won. So it got me on to the 150. But it was an amazing season. Like I think at 150 in Ireland, and I think 12 winners in England. But it was just go, go, go. Like every time I went to the races, I was nearly riding a winner. And, you know, it was like what I was saying. If I didn't ride a winner, I would be kind of angry and I'd be in bad humor. But, you know, when you're riding winners like that, you just want to keep riding winners. But it was a fantastic season.
So you have to be very driven, very single-minded to get there. So like at the time, you know, did other things matter? Was it just really a case of working so hard to ensure that you got to that 150 that, you know, overshadowed everything else? You had to be the best, and to get there, you needed to reach that target.
I was, yeah. No, it was... I kind of, you know, when I got to sort of 135, I kind of said, you know, I was after riding for a few years. I was after riding over 100 winners. And I said, it'd be nice to ride 150. And when I got to 135, I started to think about it. I wasn't really thinking about it before that. But when I got to 135, I was really thinking about it. And maybe sometimes when you want something so bad, it doesn't always happen, you know. I was lucky. I only one more day left, and I'm 149. So I definitely have to thank Conor O'Dwyer for that one anyway. You know, the horse won easy, actually. So I, you know, but it was very nice of Conor to let me ride him. But yeah, no, it was a great thrill to do it because, you know, all the fantastic jockeys that have been since, you know, Barry Garrity, Paul Carberry, and obviously Ruby Walsh, they haven't beat it yet. So, and they haven't beaten it, it might take a while for somebody else to beat it. But I'm sure somebody riding for Willie Mullins or somebody like that, Gordon Elliott, or somebody might do it someday.
So you were on a serious roll back then, Charlie. And like one of the aspects, I suppose, of racing that people just see from afar is the injuries. You know, the injuries are always something that's highlighted, and it's in a lot of sports, really. But I suppose in horse racing, a fall is a very dangerous thing, or can be a very dangerous thing. So like, just looking back on your career, did you have many injuries, or what bones did you break, I suppose, is better to ask?
I did. I had a good few. I broke my arms 6 times. I fractured my skull, broke about 10 ribs, collarbone, bone on my foot, my leg, vertebrae in my back, my nose, punctured lung, things like that. But I was sort of lucky enough that it happened mostly during the summer. So I never missed a ride on Istabrak or anything, which was amazing. Sometimes you'd be suspended or you'd be out injured, but I never missed a ride on them. And I was lucky enough that way. During the winter season, I think I broke my arm once maybe during the winter. Otherwise, it was always during the summer. See, the ground is always quick in the summer, so it's when you do fall in the summer, you usually break something. So it's but the ground is heavy or whatever, you're usually fine, you know.
Do they ever affect you now, these injuries? Because I know I have a couple of breaks myself from hurling matches, and you'd feel it on a cold winter's morning maybe where you broke it. Like, do you find that it's affecting you now at a later stage in your life, really, the injuries that you got back then?
Yeah, sometimes my back the odd time gives me a bit of trouble and stuff. And my arms, they wouldn't be the strongest, but I'm able to play golf away and everything. So that's not too bad.
Something that always struck me and I wondered about is, you know, do jockeys think of these injuries, you know, as the race is about to start? Do they think about it the week before? Does it come into their head at all, into their mindset? Can you race if you have injuries on your mind? You know, all these things can play, I suppose, with your mind. How did you deal with that, the prospect of being injured? Or, you know, was it something that you were conscious of, or did you just push it to one side and focus on the next jump, the next fence, the next race?
Yeah, I suppose the injury part, I mean, you'd be lying to say that you wouldn't be nervous, you know, going out for maybe the Grand National or races or the big races. You kind of have, you're nervous that you don't mess up, but not nervous that you're going to get a fall, really. It's more that you don't, you know, you don't mess up. But I always said if I got nervous about getting the fall, that I'd give up. So really at the end of your career, when you're sort of thinking about falls, that's when you sort of give up, you know. And that's probably some of the reason why I did retire from being a jockey, was I was starting to think about getting the falls. And, you know, you kind of go, you know, there's more to life than getting hopped off the ground every day you go out. So there's not too many sports that an ambulance follows you around, you know, so.
Yeah. That brings us around, Charlie, to the most famous horse for a lot of people here in Tipperary, trained by Aidan O'Brien, Easterbrack.
Yeah, you know, I was so fortunate, you know, that Aidan trained him, but then JP and Noreen owned him. So, you know, I was just very, very lucky to be around at the same time. And, you know, he was a brilliant horse. Like, you could ride him anywhere. His best part of him was his jumping. He was absolutely electric to jump. He did fall twice, but it was on very, very heavy ground. And but he was, you know, he was a terrific horse. He was, I think we won 23 races or something together, and three English champion hurdles, and I think four Irish champion hurdles. You know, he's a brilliant horse.
So Easterbrack won three champion hurdles, 1998, 1999 and 2000. And then you were going for four in a row, coming up to 2001. And then, of course, foot and mouth struck. Is that something that you reflect on to this day? Do you think you'd have got there that year?
Yeah, he was in great form at the time. And Aidan was telling me he was in super form. And I was really looking forward to it. And, you know, that was probably the biggest sickener in my career was, you know, was foot and mouth. Like, because no horse has ever won it four times, and no jockey's ever won it four, obviously, on the same horse. So it would have gone into the history books. But, you know, it was unfortunate. And then, of course, he went back the following year, and he got injured, and I had to pull him up after the second hurdle.
How quickly did you figure out that Easterbrack was a really special horse? Is there a bond there between yourself and Easterbrack that you would feel you knew that this horse and yourself could do something magical, that you could really go on this journey?
Yeah, well, riding him, you know, from the first day I rode him, so, you know, you'd know he was special. The way, you know, his technique of jumping hurdles, and then he had good ability on the flat as well. But his technique over hurdles was just something else. And, you know, you do get feelings off horses, you know, when you're riding them work and things. And even going to the start some days, you say, God, this horse has given me a lovely feel going to the start, whatever. And but it's obviously, it's hard to know if they're any good unless you've actually ridden them in a race or ridden them work. It's, you know, you'd be sort of lying if you said one was a good horse, you know, just from riding him a canter. But you would get a certain feeling off a horse, but, you know, by riding him out and whatever. And you'd be just hoping that he'd prove you right when you go to run him.
And you've been on some other magnificent horses really down the years. You know, Denoli, Viking Flagship, you know, there's been some incredible horses.
Yeah, Denoli was a fantastic horse. He was tough as nails and trained really well by Tom Foley. Unfortunately, Tom passed away there, you know, a month ago or whatever, and it was very sad. But he was a really, really good horse. Viking Flagship was a 2 mile champion chaser, so it was a great thrill to ride. Go 2 miles over fences, flat to the boards, and jump the way he did. You know, that was a really good thrill. I rode a very good horse then called Montelado, but I only rode him the once. He won the Supreme Novice at the Cheltenham Festival, and he looked like he was going to be a champion hurdle contender. Only he was plagued by injury, and I don't think he ran over hurdles much after that. I don't think he ever ran over hurdles after that. You know, which was unfortunate.
You've had so many winners, Charlie. Has there been a favourite? You know, is there one that stands out above all the others?
I suppose you'd have to say Easterbrack was my favourite because he won the best races. Yeah, it's hard to know. I won a lot of races on a lot of different horses. A filly called Lucky Baloo was one of my favourites. She's after. Her breeding has gone on well, you know, so there's some good horses in her pedigree. And, you know, you'd have to say Easterbrack was my favourite.
Would you get a feel for a horse's temperament, for the way a horse is like, you know, would it set the likes of Easterbrack apart there from other ones that you've been on?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, most horses have different sort of temperaments. Istabrak, when he first started racing over hurdles, he was quite uptight and quite sweaty and things, but he actually settled down after the first year. He got way more relaxed and whatever, but you know, some horses, they do vary from horse to horse.
Does a trainer read the horse a certain way? Like, you know, for instance, if one horse is with one trainer, might they do better in a certain yard for whatever variety of reasons that you might choose? Like, the depending on location, depending on the mannerisms of the horse, depending on the feel of the yard, you know, all these things, do they matter?
Yeah, I mean, they do. I mean, that's why, yeah, some trainers might suit some horses and other trainers might suit other horses. But, and you do often find when a horse goes, sometimes changes stables, they can improve. But I don't think it's that the trainer is any better. I think it's just, it's like a new change of scenery. I think that often sparks them to a difference. You know, they often just improve again because they're in a different setting and whatever. But it doesn't mean that the other trainer is better or worse. I think it's just the change of scenery often does the horse good.
Did you realize the effect that a horse like Istabrak had on the general public, or that a winner can have on people? Do horses come up in conversations a lot, really, with people you don't know?
Yeah, I will. It's amazing. And the horse is still in great form. He's down in Martinstown. He's been looked after like a king. Like he's in great form. I think he's 28 now, and you know, he looks really well. And you know, if you were a racehorse, you know, you'd like to retire to JP's Martinstown Stud, I think.
Super. Well, Charlie, it's come to that time where you have to pick another choice. And we had Queen last time. What's it going to be this time?
Yeah, I'm going to pick Rod Stewart, Maggie May.
Good stuff, Charlie. And may I ask, why are you picking Maggie May?
I don't know. I used to like Rod Stewart, and I've been to a couple of concerts, and he's always been a fan of mine. But I'd often be playing his tape on the way to the races and stuff. And you know, it would always remind you on the way to the races. You know, I'd be playing it a fair bit, and it would just remind you of those days.
Well, here it is now. It's Maggie May, the choice of Charlie Swan on Tip FM. You turned into a lover and mother, what a- Very welcome back to Time Out here on Tip FM. I'm Stephen Gleeson and my guest here with me is Charlie Swan. So Charlie, you picked Queen, the first song, and then the second one was Rod Stewart. And like, I know you're really into music. Do you feel that it has an effect on horses as well, on animals? Because, you know, it's a huge part of people's lives, especially in lockdown. I think people have really turned to music in a big way, because they just have that time to listen to a song, maybe in a way that they mightn't otherwise. Is it something that plays a part in your life? Would you have the radio on? Would you be listening to tunes?
Yeah, it would. You know, I used to always play music on the way to the races. And then when I was training, I'd often have the radio on in the barns or whatever. Thought, you know, it would really relax the horses. And, you know, I think it relaxes the jockeys when we're going to the races as well. It kind of gets you... you know, it gets you to just to relax and be in the moment.
So after you finished up as a jockey, you went into training horses. Like, was it hard to let go of being a jockey? You know, I often interview players that have won multiple All-Irelands, and the minute they stop playing, they find it so hard. And some of them go into management to try and get back that buzz, you know. But you stayed as a jockey for a while as you made that jump into trainer.
Yeah, I actually trained and rode for a year or two before I gave up the riding. I sort of went into it slowly. And then it got a little bit too much to try to do both, you know, trying to ride, trying to look for rides and trying to train horses at the same time. It was getting too much. So I gave up the riding. Now, you would miss the big days, obviously. You'd really miss... But and you'd miss the check coming in every month as well. The training is a lot harder. You know, like, it was one of those things. I was 35. I always said if I get to 35, I've done well. You know, I've 20 years riding, and so I just, you know, I had a young family at the time as well, so. I just thought it was the right time to give up the riding.
So can you compare the two? I mean, tell us about what a typical day is like in the life of a racehorse trainer in comparison to a day in the life of a jockey.
Yeah, you have a lot more responsibilities. You know, you have all the staff in the yard, you have all the owners, and there's so many little small details. You know, you have to do entries, you have to make sure that the feed companies, the bedding companies, that, you know, that the horses have, you know, exactly what they want. Because, these horses get treated very, very well and they get looked after. Like, I mean, there's like 5-star hotels, some of them, you know, they're looked after so well. And there is so many little factors that you have to think about when you're training, and it is a lot harder job. I mean, when you're riding, right, you know, when you're a jockey, you kind of ride the horse, and you know, you're thinking about your next rides and stuff, but definitely training, it's a big step. It's a big different step, you know.
Would you have a lot more thinking ahead, really? Would you have a lot more looking to next week, next month, next year, to see when a horse is ready, what's the peak for the horse? As a jockey, it's probably just more a matter of focusing on where am I going on Tuesday, where am I going on Wednesday. But with this, it's probably a bit different. Is that fair to say?
That's right. You have to, you know, you need to plan out where, you know, I'm going to run him here in 2 weeks' time, and maybe we'll see how he comes out of the race, but there might be a race coming up then in 3 or 4 weeks' time. And you have to make a plan for all the horses. And if you've sort of 60 or 70 horses in the yard, there's a lot of horses to make plans for. And, you know, it is mind-boggling how much work there is. And, you know, I really loved it now. I really loved it. But at the same time, it was hard work and it is quite stressful. And, you know, it's amazing how so many trainers just keep going, because it is hard going, and it's, you know, mentally it is tough, you know, and especially if you're not winning the big races and things, it can be mentally, you know, really, really tough. And I suppose I was lucky enough. I had a good time of it. I had plenty of winners and plenty of big winners, but at the same time, when you're after being champion jockey 9 times, whatever, and you're not quite winning the amount of races that you used to, it is a little bit different. And, you know, it makes you think, is there more to life than, you know, like the training is 24 hours a day, really. It's nonstop. And, you know, the time I gave up, I just, you know, I'd been speaking to my accountant, and he kept saying, if you don't have 50 horses, there's no way of, you know, you're not making money if you want more than 50 horses with the amount of staff you have. And I didn't want to go letting off people, you know, just for the sake of having 30 horses, whatever. I was either going to do it properly or not do it at all. And I just found that I wasn't making money. So when you're not making money, it's like everything. It's, you know, at the end of the day, it's a business. And if it's not viable, you have to cut it. So you have to be a special type of person, really, to train horses. You know, it is like, you know, the worst thing of it is when the horse gets injured, and, you know, not only for the poor horse, but also for the owner. So you're having to ring the owner and tell him the bad news. And, you know, it's all quite stressful. And, you know, and they're so delicate. Like, they do get, you know, small injuries, and it might stop them from training for a week, it might stop them for a month or two, or might stop them for a whole year. So it can be stressful. Like, you're after buying an owner a horse, and you think it's a really good horse, and 3 months later you tell him it's injured, you know, like, you know, he's after paying a good bit of money for it, and all his dreams are gone, as well as my own dreams. But you know, it is quite stressful. You know, it is quite stressing. But at the same time, you wouldn't be in it unless you loved it, because it is a hard game. But I'm glad I did it.
So after 270 winners as a trainer, you moved on and just started a new phase in your life again. I mean, that must have been difficult, because your whole life was spent in racing. I mean, your dad was a trainer as well, and like, that's tough, really. That's a huge upheaval.
It was hard, and it was hard on the staff as well, because there were some of them there, they've been here for 15 years or whatever, and you know, it's tough going, and then you kind of thinking, what am I going to do next, whatever. But it was tough, but it was a case of, you know, if you're losing money, you can't keep going. So
what does life hold now in 2021?
Well, we do, you know, I do a bit of buying and selling. We buy foals and we sell them as 3-year-olds and stuff. And do a bit with my father-in-law and my two brother-in-laws, Tim Hyde and Norman Williamson. And I do a bit for JP, buy horses in France for him. So that takes a good bit of my time off as well. So it's, I know it's enjoyable to stay in the sport. At least I'm still in the sport. And, you know, I watch the racing the whole time. And, you know, it's enjoyable.
When you're into racing, you're in it for life.
You are, really. You either love it or you hate it, I think. And I love it.
Looking back, Charlie, is there a horse that just leaves you with some bit of regret? Is there a day that you'd love to go back and change and, you know, get that winner that you didn't get? Have you regrets from racing?
Yeah, there was one horse. I was second in the Stayers Hurdle on a horse called Banner Bay. Christy Roach trained it. Paul Shanahan and John Magner owned it. And it was a complete mess up. I should have won. I should have won three or four lengths. I got beaten in the neck. But it was my biggest regret of all. I think of all, like, I suppose I got beaten on probably a good few horses I probably should have won on. But that was the biggest regret of all. I really loved this horse. And I thought he was a real champion. And I just messed up on the day. And he ended up getting injured after. So he never could get to prove how good he really was, you know. Which was, you know, which was quite sad because he was one of the best horses I rode.
Would it haunt you afterwards losing a race? You know, like, would you be thinking about it that night, the next day? Is it something that that stays for a while?
Oh, it would, yeah. I was actually on, I was on Racing UK the other day, and Kevin O'Ryan said to me, "Oh, you won the Stayers Hurdle on Banner Bay," and that's the horse I actually got beat in the Stayers or a neck. He even thought I won it, but unfortunately I didn't. But you know, you, like, for the next few days you would be, you know, you'd be riding the race through your head a million times. But it's one race I've always, you know, always regretted.
Charlie, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you today on Time Out on Tip FM. We're going to be finishing up very soon, so I'd love to know, have you a third musical choice? Is there another song there that means a lot to you?
I do. Queen, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Another absolute classic. Charlie, you're a big Queen fan. Like, the first song was Queen as well.
I am. So they're my sort of ear, aren't they? Queen and Rod Stewart.
Charlie, it's been super having you. We're going to finish up with Bohemian Rhapsody. And just before we go, do you think we'll have people back at the races this summer? Is it something that we're going to see those huge crowds again and the great joy that it brings?
I think, well, you know, I think, you know, with these, you know, the vaccinations are going well. And, you know, once we get the ICU down, I think, you know, we can drive on, really. You know, that's the main thing. I think once the ICU have room, I think the whole country can get back, hopefully.
So we're finishing up with Bohemian Rhapsody, the choice of Charlie Swan. Thanks again, Charlie.
Stephen, thanks.
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide, no escape from reality. Open your eyes, look up to the skies and see. I'm just a poor boy. I need no sympathy. Because I'm easy come, easy go. Little high, little low. Any way the wind blows doesn't really matter. To me.
Beelzebub has a devil put aside for me, for me, for me.